Truss. Have you got one? Do you know what they are? Do you know how they work? We're going to talk about it today with Bridget Finke. Bridget, of course, with Valley Crossing Law in the Baldwin area. And Bridget, we've talked about trusts before, but I guess what exactly are trusts? Because you read ads say, you know, trusts aren't what you should be doing, and this, that, and the other. What is a trust, and how can we use it effectively?
Well, I like to say there's as many different kinds of trusts as there are ice cream flavors. So there's all different types of trusts that accomplish all different types mm-hmm. of purposes. Generally, it's just a separate legal entity that we establish to hold and manage and eventually distribute assets. So, example, a parent passes away young, has $200,000 worth of life insurance, has young kids that are in elementary school. We obviously don't want to give the elementary school kids $200,000, right?
Mm, well, I hope not.
So instead, we set up a trust for their benefit, put those funds in that trust. The children then are the beneficiaries of the trust. They get the benefit of those assets. We pick someone to be in charge of the trust, to manage the assets and decide when and if and how money is spent on behalf of the kids. And that's the trustee. That's who's in charge. And within there, then, there's a set of rules to the game that the grantor, the person who put the money in, establishes to say what kind of guidelines they should use, the trustee should use, mm-hmm. when it makes those decisions. So that's one example.
We look at trust, we hear terms like revocable, irrevocable. What does all that mean?
Mm-hmm. So it's those. That's one primary distinction between kind of the classes of trusts is revocable versus irrevocable. Revocable trusts are ones that we use in estate planning a lot, and they can be revoked. They can be changed. They can be thrown out. So really,
by the trustee only?
No, by the grantor. Often in those revocable trusts, revocable trusts are often used instead of a will, just as a way of avoiding that probate process, because we don't want to pay that 0.2% fee on our $3 million mm-hmm. worth of farmland, right? We want that to pass privately and not need that court process. And so in that case, those three different parties that I mentioned that are part of the trust, the grantor who puts the stuff in, the beneficiary who gets the benefit of it, and the trustee who's in charge. When you use that as your main estate planning document, you're in all three of those roles. So you have complete control over those assets, and you can change your mind and sort of do whatever you want for those assets. And for that reason, it's looked through from an income tax perspective. So if you're an active farmer and you put the farm in your revocable trust, you still file your Schedule F just like you always did. Nothing changes in that way. As opposed to that irrevocable trust, which can't be changed, you do give up control and becomes its own tax-paying entity at that point. So gets its own number, files its own tax return. So
what's
that's
the
one
advantage
of the
big.
For instance, if we want to do gifting, so we're worried about estate tax, and we've got a bunch of grandkids that we'd like to set up an education fund for them, but there again, we don't want to write mm-hmm. that check to the six-year-old, right?
Right.
So instead, we might say, okay, I'm going to create an irrevocable trust for the benefit of those kids so that when I write that check, it's complete. I don't have control over it. So now I've gotten that money out of my estate. And that set aside with our rules of the game of, hey, mm-hmm. use that for educational expenses.
So then the government can't come back and say,
it's really
you
still
pay
your
tax.
Asset. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's really, again, think of a trust as one of our tools in the toolbox that we might use for estate planning or farm succession. And whether it's the right tool for our job really depends on the circumstances, in the same way that, you know, my mm-hmm. classic example, you don't want to use a sledgehammer to hang a picture. Sledgehammer is a great tool, but we want the right tool for the job.
So where are the holes in trust? What are some of the things, to potholes to look out for as far as setting up a trust for medical coverage, nursing home, next generation? Where are some of the holes?
I think the biggest misunderstanding is that people go and get a revocable trust established to avoid that probate process, to avoid those fees. And then they think, well, I have a trust. I'm protected from the nursing home, right? Well, wrong, because remember, we talked about those revocable trusts. You're still in charge. You still have control. You can change your mind. In order to protect assets from the nursing home, you have to give up that control and do that at least that 5 years before you go into the nursing home in order to not have those assets count. So it's important to make sure you've got the right tool that fits the job you're trying to accomplish.
Can we do everything on the farm with one trust, so to speak, or are there some things that we should put in an irrevocable trust, some things we should put in a revocable trust, so we've got maybe more than one trust to cover what we need to cover for future generations and also protecting the current operation of the farm?
Mm-hmm. It's possible that you might have multiple trusts involved. Certainly, it's not uncommon that mom and dad have a trust, and son and daughter-in-law have a trust, and daughter and son-in-law have a trust, and so there may be multiple trusts involved there. It's also not uncommon that if we have recreational land, hunting land, family cabin, that kind of thing, that might be the kind of asset that we put in an irrevocable trust, that we're not worried about the tax side mm-hmm. of things because it's not generating income, but we want to make sure we have that protection from nursing home, you know, to allow that. I mean, we just got off the 4th of July holiday, you know, those times with the family and out at the family property.
If we do have various family members having their own trusts, are these completely separate? In other words, can the government say, well, mom and dad have a trust and son Jim and his wife have a trust, but they're all concerning the farm?
Sure.
But are they separate still?
They are separate in the trust. You know, each trust only controls whatever assets it owns. So, you know, no different that if we're in a family farm corporation together, you know, mom and dad's stock is mom and dad's stock and son's stock is son's stock. And so that's still separate. They are separate. But then it's important you make sure you know what the heck you have in which trust, you know, who owns what. And that's a lot easier when it comes to real estate, but it's a lot harder with all that machinery sitting in the same shed together.
And farming evolves. Obviously, a farm evolves. Can a trust evolve, and we can update and change the trust as we get more acres, get more machinery, more people into the farming operation? Can we change our trust?
But back to that revocable versus irrevocable becomes important, because if it's revocable, we can change anything. Irrevocable, not, as it's possible, but everyone has to agree. And so if that family cabin or that hunting land, let's say, is in that irrevocable trust and it says all the kids are equal beneficiaries, and now when mom and dad decide that one kid is doing things they don't like and they want them out, well, that kid's going to have to sign off to agree to that change. And what do you suppose the odds of that are?
Ooh, not good, that's for sure. But then again, as we get into something like that, as far as the irrevocable trust, and for mom and dad and the kids to all be involved in that, does it automatically equal participation or equal benefit?
Mom and dad can set those terms at the time they set up the trust. You know, if it was mom and dad's hunting land, they can set those terms. And so that's why you always want to be really careful on the front end of those and make sure you consider all the pros and cons and the potential change circumstances. Because in a way, it sounds like, hey, we're 55, we're still in good health, let's get that hunting land protected, let's get it out of our name, you know, great idea, let's go and set it aside in this trust for all those kids. And you don't think about circumstances changing in the kids' lives and how that might impact things down the road.
So if mom and dad have that hunting land or hunting cabin and they want to make sure it's a benefit for the kids in the future, and they list the kids there, they're just as much an owner of that trust as mom and dad who started the irrevocable trust?
Not owner, because remember, the trust is its own. It's its own thing. So the trust owns it, but they are beneficiaries, and so they get that
all
beneficial
equal.
Interest.
Mean,
yep.
Okay.
If that's the way mom and dad set it up. And really, mom and dad probably aren't going to be anything in that trust. They don't want to retain any interest because now it's an available asset potentially for the nursing home.
All right. So lots of questions about trusts, and if you've got them, Give Bridget a call at Valley Crossing Law in the Baldwin area. Bridget, how do we get a hold of you?
715-688-4045, or you can check us out on wisconsinfarmlaw.com.
All right. Bridget Finke with us once again, answering your legal questions, this time talking about trusts. Bridget, again, with Valley Crossing Law in the Baldwin area.